data all being, and that CRM I talked about being in the middle, the benefits that brings of having that one source of truth just compounds, because you're spending less time doing reports every week. You're spending less time making sure that integrations are working.
Welcome to UnMiss, your go-to digital marketing hub. I'm Anatoly Ulatovsky, here with expert tips and exclusive chats to boost your online game. Let's get started.
Hello, good people. Welcome to our show. Hello, bad people. Welcome to our show. Hello, welcome. Today, we are going to discuss about a very important topic about content marketing monetization. It's not like to get a lot of traffic. It's not like to get this engagement. It's more about how you can monetize your efforts, how many sales you can get, because I often see when companies pay so much attention to get traffic, but if traffic doesn't sell your products, it's useless. And I know a few brands, companies that lost 400,000 traffic, a lot of traffic from Google, but they didn't lose any sales. It's common issue when you get traffic but you can't monetize. It's you need to think how you can get right traffic and how you can provide the right insights, call to action to monetize all your efforts. I'm so excited to discuss a lot more with Paul Mortimer. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing? Happy Friday.
Yeah, it's a big pleasure to get on my show. We record this show on Friday. Probably we can get in another day in podcast. But anyway, I love Friday. I have a special feeling about Friday from school. It doesn't mean that I hate Monday. I love Monday as well. For me, it's a good day. In school, yeah, I hated Monday. Today, I love Monday. And if you hate Monday, I can advise only to choose another job. You know, leave it. You will never regret. You need to enjoy each moment. So I love Friday. I love Monday, Sunday, Saturday, any other day, Wednesday. I love all of them. You need to enjoy. If you enjoy, then you can outwork your competitors. You can get great results. If you do for the sake of money, and I had this experience, bad experience. I remember when I started one project because of chasing money. I hated Monday. I loved Friday. That was a tough feeling. I invested a lot of resources, hired a big team. And after 3 years, I gave up. I got it. No. I can't go ahead like this. For me, it's not a bad idea to give up if you hate it, if you don't enjoy the process. Today, I never touch anything if I don't enjoy. Money will come if you enjoy the process, when you are ready to outwork your competitors. Paul, before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, and anything that can help our listeners to learn more about you.
Okay, so I work for Avidly HubSpot Solutions. We're a HubSpot marketing and CRM agency, but myself personally, I'm head of our marketing at the agency with in the in-house team. I've worked for years on working with our clients. But when you mentioned about hating Mondays and loving Fridays, I've been there myself. In a past life, my first career was in the construction industry, working in commercial management and quantity surveying and arguing about money and earning money for the business. And I used to definitely hate Mondays. I used to also kind of not really enjoy Fridays because I had a long commute to get home and I knew I only had 48 hours before I had to do it all again. And I was in a really horrible cycle, earning good money, but not enjoying it. And I went back to what was my passion as a child, writing pictures, photography, designing things, and decided to pursue that and wanted to spend my working week doing things related to primarily words. So writing, career change, got into writing and teaching about writing, and then ended up in the marketing industry doing writing for a living. So 100%, didn't know you were going to talk about that at the intro. I don't think it was just off the cuff, but yeah, that reminded me of a journey into writing and doing it for passion. I know we're going to talk about monetizing content, but for me, it's just something that's fun. For people who enjoy writing, the money will come. Don't chase the money, just do the writing. If you do that, I've got a passion for it, the rest will follow. So yeah, that's kind of what my philosophy has been since deciding to do it.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, I agree completely. And I have this philosophy as well. So money will come. And I can't say that I don't love money. I love money. They can help to decide a lot of problems. But you need to love more your job. If you love more your job, then money will come. Definitely. Paul, I want to start from marketing strategy. I think, you know, according to data, many companies have no documented content strategy. I mean, like, they usually chase some generic metrics, analyze competitors, do the same, but they might have different audience, different customers, their unique selling proposition. And I often see when someone wants to get where competitors have strong positions. For example, if I wanna, let's imagine, I wanna promote the keyword SEO in Google. It's tough. It's tough because I need to compete with Google itself, with Moz, Neil Patel, big brands. It's tough. They deserve these ranking positions. And I need to invest millions, and I'm not sure if I can get any results. But I know that even big companies have weak sites. We usually chase something that our competitors are weak and where you can provide something different with your strong side. And of course, to unite with your unique selling proposition and customers. Can you tell your methods how to create the right strategy, craft the strategy, and I don't know, to implement in the long run?
Yeah, so I think when you talk about that, resources, where to start for me, how much and what can you produce will help you decide where to find your audience. Assuming we're talking digital marketing here, when you say competing in that example against somebody big, you're not going to out-produce them. So you need to be more savvy with the resource available. Every client I've ever worked with has had limited resource compared to what they could be doing. So it's about getting smart and choosing which field to play on. And even down to the sort of platform, but also the topic. So you can't cover everything about your expertise, but covering what your key customers, what your number one persona that you're targeting is interested in, giving value to that. And ideally in the places that they're hanging out online. And that may well be finding you via Google, but I think with an eye for longer term future, we're definitely advising people to just be online where their audience is rather than trying to be everywhere and trying to talk about everything. So your strategy should boil down to a narrower set of platforms, a narrower topic that your audience is interested in that you can best help with.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And can you tell how you learn your audience and how you can choose the right audience? Because even big companies have a struggle to find the right audience, especially when, you know, it can be men, women, different ages, different interests, and all of them can buy your products. But how to find this buying persona?
Yeah, I think we always fall back to just asking and talking to and listening to your customers. If you can get any time talking to your customers who've recently purchased with you or an ongoing customer, if you can get to know what they do in terms of their browsing habits, where they consume content, what kind of content they consume, and obviously demographic things about them, what age they are, what sort of interests they've got, all of those things can help you create a sort of ideal persona of those 10 people you interview. Find the common traits, boil that down into one fictional person that you're going to target. You know, this fictional person hangs out on LinkedIn Monday to Friday and Instagram in the evenings. That's probably where you want to spend your paid ad spend, on those two platforms. You want to be talking about the topics in a way that's fresh for them on those places. You don't just fall into the never-ending company noise. And also in terms of topics of what you talk about in those places, really there's nothing more richer than listening to what the customers tell you, what they want in answers to. Listen to what they ask you, what they ask your sales team, what they ask your client managers, what they ask. If you're that person yourself, what are your customers asking on calls? What are, when you're delivering work, what questions do they ask? That'll tell you a lot about what, if they're wondering it, all these other people in the same scenario will be wondering it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned about LinkedIn, about let's speak about paid marketing. It's different with organic reach, and I know companies can waste $500K in LinkedIn paid ads to get zero leads. You know, big companies, and they cooperated with well-known experts. You know, real people who have experience, but $500K and nothing. Can you tell your methods how to minimize this risk? I understand you can't predict anything. It takes time to test, to experiment, to choose. And as, if we speak about LinkedIn or even Google Ads, it costs a lot to pay for these clicks. And you need to do, I don't know, like to go step by step to minimize risk, to experiment. Can you tell how to do it?
How to run the tests is...
Yeah, how to minimize the risk to find the right marketing message, paid ads, what kind of paid ads will convert. Because if you, I mean, like, if you invest $500K and get zero leads, I think it's not a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, and yeah, like you say, the first thing is to always remember that there is no easy prediction. And also you're at the mercy of the paid platforms. They just can make their own rules up and change the rules, move the goalposts whenever they like. And I think that's happened this week on Meta. People have been finding that what was working last month isn't working this month because something's changed. Yeah. So that's always worth bearing in mind. So you need to always, you can't just set it and forget it. You need to always be optimizing. And I think when it comes to testing, we always start small and start with testing to find what works. You can't expect to just hit the bullseye straight away and put all money behind that one idea. It should have testing and regular optimizing based on the great data that you do get, because what better than there's probably only email with more precise analytics on how people are interacting with your content. SEO is more a longer play. It's about gut feel and it's about building something for the future, whereas you can pay now and get data back. You can show a graphic to, I don't know, $500 worth of people this week and go back to the drawing board, tweak it, try again next week. You can get that good learnings. Stop, regroup, test again, stop, regroup, test again. That's the beauty of the testing phase. Really break it down and then follow good testing principles. Don't try and know what you're testing. Don't try and do two wildly different ones, because you won't really have anything more than a surface level learning. So we look at things like the same copy with a slightly different colored graphic, or really precise A/B testing and then doing it frequent and always building and optimizing. That way you keep the risk small.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
definitely it's necessary. And then the other thing I was going to mention was just learnings you get from your audience. Assuming that you already have nailed largely who your audience is and who you're targeting, how people are interacting with your website or your Google ads, within reason, the same things are going to resonate with them on LinkedIn, or how they interact with you on Instagram is probably going to be the same how they'd interact with you on Reddit. So finding your learnings on just one stream can see what you can apply elsewhere in similar places.
Yeah, Paul. I want to get back to content marketing. You know, content marketing is huge. Now, SEO, social media, I don't know, webinars, podcasts, everything. Yeah, it's a huge market. And I see when companies chase almost all channels or a lot of channels. For example, I remember I started in 2020 to grow my social media accounts. And I created content for LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Pinterest, everywhere. And my best results were like 5-10 followers a day, a few hundred views, nothing special. Then I switched all my attention to LinkedIn. I created content on LinkedIn, ignoring other social media. I even didn't repurpose content. It takes like 5-10 minutes, but I got it why I need to do it if I can't engage people on other social media. A format is different. So I decided to pay attention on one social media, and I got results on LinkedIn. Sometimes I got like 500 followers a day, a bunch of views, like 100K views, and that worked well. I see when companies are looking for ways to grow their social media accounts, to get SEO traffic from scratch. It's a good idea when you have resources, when you have different departments, because it's tough to be good everywhere. It's like jack of all trades, master of none. Can you tell your methods? How to choose the right method for content marketing and stick with that?
We've done the same thing, really. We're an in-house team. A lot, although we have 300 people, we work across the business and on marketing. They're all busy working for clients. So our in-house team is only small. There's three of us in marketing. And we have to cover all bases there. So no, we have had to pick our battles and pull back from certain social media platforms. We don't have the time to invest to win at X and Facebook. Therefore, we have an account and a presence, but we don't put any active effort into it. So that's our strategy, like kind of what you said, to lean into what we have the time and availability to do properly. Otherwise, spreading yourself thin and posting once everywhere probably isn't going to have the same results as going deeper onto fewer channels. That's our approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. And if you choose one marketing channel, let's imagine any marketing channel, and how to stand out from the rest. I mean, like, how to create something that this channel doesn't have. And I want to share a short story about Lloyd Richards. He published a book, if I remember correctly, like 11 years ago on Amazon. But that was interesting about the story that he spent around 12 or 14 years to write this book, more than a decade to write a single book. Then he used marketing, sales, nothing back. He couldn't sell this book. Then his daughter posted content on TikTok about this book. This video became viral, plus 50 million people watched this video, including me, one view. Of course, I watched this video. I want to know how to get 50 million views. And what I found on this book, on this video, it's simple, nothing special. No, I couldn't find nice looking design. But this video provokes curiosity. What kind of book is this? Why it's interesting? And today, this book is bestseller on Amazon. A lot of sales. So one video beats a lot of marketing and sales channels, because standing out from the rest, it's unique. I'm pretty sure today you can find a bunch of videos like this, you know, because marketers are good to destroy something that worked for others, you know. But when users see one time something new, interesting, unique, they can engage more with that. So can you tell, for example, you decided to jump in one channel, and you need to compete with marketers and companies. They spent like years on this channel. You know, they know their audience. They know how to win users, customers. Can you tell how you find this unique site to bring something new to the table?
Well, I guess what's only unique that you can bring is yourself. The video you're describing, I'm guessing, if his daughter's done it on TikTok, it's screaming out to me that that's a video that's going to be raw, genuine, honest, and
of course, yeah,
emotive. 100%. Emotive as a result, and then that's cut through all the marketing speak.
You don't need to watch this video, you understand this video.
But that's real, and that's yeah. That's 14 years of love that she and dedication going to the book, or however many years it was, you said 10 or 12 years. she's seen her dad put that energy into it and has communicated that in an honest way in a video, and people have bought into that. If you just then go and talk about a hot topic as a company, then I don't think you're going to get the same success. If you're going to try and sound like everybody else, you're just going to sound like everybody else. What's even worse is that if you don't sound like yourself and it sounds like you're just trying to talk about what everybody else is, that's probably going to have a counter effect. So finding your own voice is the first piece of advice and first strategy that you can that you can follow. Being yourself in terms of what you actually know, admitting what you don't, and communicating it in a way that if that person then comes to speak to you, it should sound the same. It shouldn't be, I don't know, a really corporate account, and then you pick up the phone and it's, hey, yo, how's it going? That's a disconnect straight away, and you're back. You've just broken that trust between your audience. But if you are that if that face behind the business is that corporate professional, almost cold and clinical, then that'd work. But being genuine, I think that's the best place you can start, because everybody else is talking their way. You should talk your way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it. Paul, let's talk about HubSpot.
Okay, yeah.
Can you tell about this tool, how this tool can help you to get more sales from content marketing?
Yeah, so for sales and marketing people, HubSpot's the ideal tool. That's the bread and butter. It does do other things. It's got a website, CMS. It's got customer service. It's got an operations tools. But its core is it started as a marketing automation platform. And I remember 10 years ago, nearly, when I first got into the world of HubSpot, it was a marketing tool that sort of did everything a marketer needs, the second best of everything. But its benefit was you got everything in one tool. But where that's grown over the years, it is leading at a lot of those things. So it's a better email tool than any dedicated email tool I've played with. But that's just 1% of what HubSpot does. So it's really, really grown on the marketing front, especially for content marketers. And their R&D budget is insane, and they are developing things at such a pace. It is huge. For people to use it for sales and marketing purposes, it's perfect, because at the core of every bit of HubSpot is the CRM. It's all built around the contact record of every user in your database. So the sales team, the marketing team are using and pulling from the same one bit of shared data in the same breath. The material you're putting out as a content marketer is using and can be tailored to what you know about that user who's in your CRM. You can use all the learnings of that as a content marketer to better craft your content that's going out to the audience. And when people interact with it, it's all getting logged, and the data is building up, and the knowledge you've got for your future content marketing efforts is all building up in that CRM. But then that's all there for sales purposes afterwards as well. And it's the same bit of data. You can see how they've interacted with every bit of content you've put out from the system. And it's all there and easy to use. And everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet, whatever the phrase is. So the tools it's got are everything you need for content marketing, essentially. They're all in there, social, email, whatever.
Yeah, got it. And it's expensive tool. You know, and can you tell the benefits? I mean, like, compared to other tools, well-known tools, we have other expensive tools like Salesforce, I don't know, many small tools, less expensive, cheap tools. And can you tell the benefits of HubSpot compared to other tools?
Sure thing. I mean, the face of it, the list price does look expensive, but you need to look at it in the full tech stack of your business. So, for example, I've just finished a couple of case studies recently that you can see HubSpot coming into your tech stack and replacing 70 to 80% of the tools you already use. So think of the smaller ticket price of those dozens of tools that you're using, and you've got one tool doing that job. So that's one straight comparison. There's a cost saving here to purchase pretty much similar on HubSpot, but the benefit kicks in, more of an intangible benefit, is that you're using one tool then. So if you're a content marketer, you now don't need your social scheduling tool, you don't need your email analytics tool, you don't need SEO or the full stack of SEO tools as such, you don't need a video hosting platform, you don't need a file content management system, you can have your website on there as well. You don't need all the WordPress plugins that need updating. WordPress runs an update, all your plugins need that, all that's gone. All of that managing, all of, even just you get a new staff member and you have to show them all these different tools. That's all gone because there's one tool there that's the same interface throughout. So a salesperson could join and a marketer could show them how to use HubSpot. So there's none of this, oh, marketers, we work in, I don't know, WordPress and MailChimp and blah, blah, blah. I can't show you how to use Salesforce. Well, mm-hmm. if we're both in HubSpot, I can. And also that data all being, and that CRM I talked about being in the middle, the benefits that brings of having that one source of truth just compounds because you're spending less time doing reports every week. You're spending less time making sure that integrations are working. That's not to say HubSpot's the only tool to use. We still do use the third-party tools, and that's because it also has an open API that can integrate with custom builds to anything, but also there are ready-made plugins to, I don't know, if you want your Salesforce team, your team in sales is still sticking with Salesforce and that's baked into your business, that's totally fine. There's a direct integration that you can set up, and it means your website and your content marketing can still be pulling all that data, and Salesforce and HubSpot can still talk to each other. So I think it's flexibility sort of negates any sort of appearing cost effect because it wipes out the need for so many other tools and any other big tools it will connect with.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, great, great. And Paul, I want to ask about one topic that it's tough to ignore today, probably impossible tomorrow, but that was simple yesterday, about AI. I know HubSpot integrates with AI. I don't know who can ignore AI today, but in marketing, sales, it's like a must-have. But many occupations still ignore AI. For example, I spoke with my two brothers, and they are working in accounting niche, and almost no one can use AI on this niche. According to data, I don't remember exactly the number, but probably less than 25% of occupations adapted to AI. The rest are still ignoring this tool. I think it's a big mistake, especially how AI is growing. Even if you can't get great results, you need to play to think how you can adapt to do it. Because in marketing, for example, 5% of marketers and content creators lost their jobs when ChatGPT appeared. I only grow my results with ChatGPT. I use AI before ChatGPT. Today, I use a lot more. I double my energy and I grow my results. I think if you use it smart, you can get great results. I know HubSpot can adapt to AI. And can you tell your methods, how you use AI, ChatGPT, or any other tools? Because we have 11,000 AI tools today. And how you use AI in HubSpot?
Yeah. So there's two ways. There's HubSpot has got AI baked in and has had for a long time. The automations and triggers and things are like rudimentary sort of AI, but there's getting generative AI tools are baked in now as well, and they're growing. There's things like ChatSpot, which is basically, I think it's built on OpenAI on ChatGPT, but is HubSpot's own creation on there, and that allows you to do things like talk to your CRM records in the way you're used to with ChatGPT, and that's sort of opens up lots of doors for the AI. Being able to talk to your CRM data means you can do things like, before you go on a sales call, you can get a summary of Anatoly's contact record, which page you can ask it, so which pages has he viewed the most, give me the links. And it's really is a virtual artificial assistant that is going and wading through all that data for you. But why that's so exciting is because when I talked about earlier, the CRM at the middle always compiling that data, there's more data than you can possibly manage in HubSpot at times. So to have AI be able to break that down for you is exciting, but it allows, it's then got the generative stuff built in as well. So you can ask ChatSpot to make a report off the back of that for you. I don't know if we broke up a bit there, but there's tools in there that will allow you to generate a report based on all that data using human language. Those are tools which, again, save you lots of time and save you lots of mental workload, ready to go into that sales call with a fresh mind, with not having had to wade through contact record and do loads of reading or whatever, or go into that report call with the reports already made instead of having to spend 30 minutes working out, do I use a graph, do I use line chart or whatever. So a lot of the lifting is done for you with AI. They're also, we're involved in some early tests for things like text to image generators, other like blog generation tools that it's got baked in. And how other AI outside of HubSpot we use is, we're big users of ChatGPT as an assistant. We do not use it for content. We don't use it for content generation. Don't believe people should, but we use it as part of the content process. So we use it as a sense checker, an idea, a brainstorm friend, a sort of going back and forth on a title, or just removing that blank page is where we use AI heavily. What I'm hoping nobody does is just, well, no, but you do see people doing it, don't you? Give me some content, posting the content. That's definitely not how we use it. But we 100% do use it in the creative process. I think you'd be daft not to. I've seen some copywriters who talk on big, people who I respect who are great at their craft, who still aren't baking AI into their creative process, which I think is a move they'll change their mind on.
Yeah, valuable. Let's talk about mistakes. You know, I made a lot of mistakes. Terrible mistakes, slight mistakes.
They say, don't they? If you're not making mistakes, you're not taking enough risks.
Yeah, exactly. And I think everyone, when they start something new, they need to make mistakes. For example, I started PR. I started PR because we paid $6,000 for one press release to write and pitch. Then I got it. We need 12 press releases a week. It's like $72,000. And I got it. It's tough to pay this money. And I decided to do this job myself. And I wrote a bunch of press releases. I don't remember exactly the number, probably more than 100. I pitched all of them. I got zero mentions, zero results, nothing. But I learned the process. Then I got it. Okay, if I can get results, I need to change something. I explained to our blog authors who can post content on Forbes, Investopedia, the big websites, and explain them. Look at, you can create great content about blog content, but we need something different. We need to touch trending topics, to satisfy journalists' intent, what they are looking for. We did it. We tested a lot, experimented, and then after 6 months, we got first results. And after some time, we got mentions on CNN, Bloomberg, Business Insider, Investopedia, MSN, Yahoo Finance, big websites, because of having the process, because of making a lot of mistakes, learning from them. And today we can save plus $3 million, you know, to do PR themselves, even better than PR agency can provide, because they usually cooperate with journalists, but we can provide even better results than journalists can do, because we cooperate with experts who know the topic, and journalists are looking for these insights. And can you tell about mistakes that you can see companies still do in your niche, in sales, HubSpot, content marketing, and your tips how to find a much better way?
Good question. I don't have any mistakes come to mind that I see people doing still. I think I guess it is a mistake, but an oversight is how I'd more describe it, is people still hung up on individual keywords and thinking every page needs to have a dedicated keyword and that's a way that you will still win at SEO. And still having not shifted to talking about broader topics and trusting the algorithms of Google and Bing to be able to decipher what the user is actually looking for and know that you're a good content provider to put in front of them. It's almost like people, I've been asked today just about giving an individual keyword to a piece, to one web page, and it's broader than that. The whole Google has been telling us for years to just make content for the user, make content that helps, share your expertise, the cream will rise to the top, basically. But people still try and get in through the back door through a keyword. It's just not gonna, it doesn't work how it did 5 years ago. But also it's not going to work in 5 years' time. We just talked about AI a moment ago, but I'm a big, big passionate believer in the fact that, imagine a trustworthy ChatGPT where you knew the information was trustworthy and you could just talk to it and get your answers. That is the ultimate search experience. Google will build that, or somebody will. Having an AI assistant that can scour trustworthy sources and say, here's the answer, and if you want my sources, go and check them out. That is what people will want and expect. So that is where content will have to be. That's where content will be consumed by users in however long it takes to reach that AI state. It could be a year, it could be five. But if you're not preparing for that now with your content, you're just painting yourself into a corner in 2025, 2026.
Yeah, got it. Paul, let's forget about marketing, monetization, about HubSpot, AI. I want to help business owners, founders, co-founders who are looking for a way how to learn the basic. How it works. The main reason why I'm asking about that, because we usually get great results with customers who understand what we do. For example, if customers understand why we need to create high quality content, why it's important to think more about users' intent, customers' intent, than to satisfy algorithms, think about algorithms. Why it's important to use legal methods, white hat SEO, then to game the system, and we get great results with these customers who are willing to wait, who have this patience, especially in SEO, but even in paid marketing, it takes. Oh, I lost connection for a while.
There we go. Even in paid, it takes time. I lost you.
Yeah, even in paid, it takes time because when companies can lose 500K, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yes.
And I have students in my network who wanna become experts in one day. They need to learn from scratch, especially today with AI, all these technologies. I wanna ask you. If you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills, it's your first day. You have a big dream to build a big company, to get a lot of sales, to earn a lot of money, to enjoy your time. What will you do if you need to learn everything from scratch?
Wow, what a question. Ask more questions. Don't be afraid of asking questions. Ask people like yourself who've been there and have got experience, ask the person sat next to you who's been working at the company longer than you have. Back to your other question, but the mistake I've seen over the years, people who struggled the most and have ended up either unhappy or finding a job elsewhere, or it hasn't worked out for them, and the company's had to let them go, whatever, is people who don't ask for help enough, like try and be a hero and take it all on, or won't admit that they need help. Make sure you ask for help, because it's amazing what that does. People love to pass on their learnings, let them, and you can absorb those learnings without having to go through the same mistakes and pain that that person did. So yeah, just keep an open mind, keep asking. That's what, mm-hmm. that'd be what I'd do if I was starting from scratch. Don't just assume because you saw something once that it's the right mm-hmm. answer. Ask. It might be the right answer, but you might be the right answer plus a little bit of someone's experience. So then it's an even better answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Ask, speak. And for me, it's important to practice even more than to learn.
Because... I used to manage the writers, and I always say people like, oh, I'm writing all day. I'm like, do you think, it was years ago, but do you think Alex Ferguson tells Ronaldo to stop practicing penalties? He doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right. Get up. I don't have time at the minute because I've got young children. I've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. So, but when the house is quiet, they're sleeping well, things like that. I love starting the day by writing, especially if I'm writing all day at work. It's kind of like a warm up. It's amazing. The more you write, the better you get at writing. I think I used to think as sort of, I don't want to use my best work in the morning on that random thing. But actually, you just get in a rhythm and you start writing better the more you write and the more you read as well. But the more you can flex those writing muscles, the better you'll be as a writer. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome, awesome. And I have 2 questions left, important questions. The first question about your balance between family, job, sport, how you prioritize things. I know you have children, you have a dog, you enjoy time to spend time with family, but you need to feed your family, to bring something to the table. And of course, it's important to think about health.
One of us is frozen.
Something is wrong with connection on Friday. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Something about, I lost you at, I've got a dog and health, prioritize your health. Yeah, yeah. How do you get a work-life balance, basically, I think?
Yeah, yeah. How to find this balance? You're inside.
I mean, I'm probably not a good example. I've been called a workaholic. But that goes back to what you said earlier. It's because I love industry I'm in and I love work I'm doing. I'm super busy at work, but I love that. I love the tasks. We've got more tasks than we have time in the day to fix. So that's one thing, trying to accept that there's only so many things you can get done in a day, and there's a time where your family needs you, and just wear the different hats. If I didn't have the family there, I probably would spend far too much time at work. Mm-hmm. But I guess my only tip is everything's in life needs to be in moderation. And sometimes you need to just accept that I assume you're asking this for people who are getting the balance too far into the work side. So I think sometimes you just need to accept that actually everything at work will be fine without you there. There are times when for your own health, your own family's happiness, just as a reward for yourself, but also at work, let your team do it. Trust them. Imagine if your boss would never take a day off. How would you feel? You'd feel not trusted. So whatever it is that you need to get that penny to drop, the world won't end just because you're leaving work to go and pick your kids up or whatever. And then the other big thing to help me keep things in balance is, somebody sent it to my wife a bit ago, but you only get one first day at school for your child. You only get one first nativity play. You only get so many years of them wanting you to cuddle them to sleep. So cherish it, because it'll be gone before you know it. So I've been really trying to focus on that over the past few years. While the kids are young and want to talk to me before they get to teenagers, I'm really trying to make the most of it. So I've made some sacrifices. I don't get up in the morning and do writing at the moment. I get up and I play Lego with my son, and it's what a way to start your day.
Yeah, I have the same experience with my son. he's teenager right now, and he's interested less and less to speak with me. He loves
soccer. It will come back though. That's the good thing with sons; it'll come back once he wants a beer.
I usually tell him to be yourself, and if you wanna find something that will great for you, it's okay, you know. He loves soccer. He plays soccer so much. I tell him, okay, if you want to become a soccer star, just do it. Just practice. Have this passion, because all coaches can say he has this passion, you know, with soccer. I just want to listen to kids. It's like when you listen to your customers, it's the same. You need to listen to your kids to understand what they want to get and lead them in the right direction. Yeah,
absolutely. All you can do is just try and be. Yeah, my parents were brilliant, but all you can try and do is just be a little bit better and try and help them. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, another good quote that helps me as well is, nobody will remember that you worked late apart from your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you think? Okay, it's not related to our main topic, but what do you think? It's a good idea to help your kids with homework. It's interesting. I had this conversation yesterday with another speaker. He's great, and he told me that his wife helps a lot kids to make homework. I replied to him, I don't help my son. I don't help because according to data. I read a few books about that. According to these books, to data, that if you help your kids to make homework, if you decide their problems, it will be tough for them in the future.
Yeah,
when nobody can help them.
That's the best gift you can give, isn't it? Resilience. We're lucky, because I think you mentioned it, but in case I didn't, I used to be a teacher, college age. My wife used to be a primary school teacher, kindergarten teacher. So we do have a bit of training on it, but our philosophy is it's a non-negotiable that it gets done. We've just tried to bake that in from preschool. It's just one of those things. It's just part of life. So at the moment, he's only five, so there's plenty of time for it to go wrong. But at the moment, it's just part of his week. Homework's part of his week. And like you say, we try and stop ourselves stepping in and doing it for him too much. She's a lot better at it than me, as my wife, because obviously she's worked with kids that age. But normalizing it. I don't know. How do you do it with a teenager? I assume things change as they get to, they think they can make their own mind up.
I usually give him freedom. I force something, like to read books. I need to force something. I think it will be valuable, but I give him freedom, but I don't help with homework. I usually tell him it's better if you get this bad score in school, but you need to figure out how to do it better without me. And it's not what kind of score can you have in school. I'm interested what kind of score you will have in the future, you know, when nobody will help you. You need to decide all these problems. And I found he can handle these things, to manage them, and he understands nobody can help him at home. He needs to find the way. And it works. It works. We'll see. But of course, we need to personalize. It depends on kids, situation, on anything. You can relate all these insights to my case, but I just learn from others. It's better to make your kids crying when in this age than they will cry when in adult age, when nobody will help them. Okay, Paul. And I have my final question. Very important question about the future. You know, many things are coming fast. Technologies are growing. And I remember when I started my digital in 2008, I changed a lot. I keep adapting. I adapt. Yeah. And if something works today, it doesn't mean you can get results tomorrow. You need to adapt faster than your competitors. For me, especially today, when we have AI, probably virtual reality will change the world. I don't know. But I can't create Microsoft, OpenAI, HubSpot. But I can use these technologies to adapt faster than my competitors. Can you tell your prediction about the future and how we can adapt to this possible future?
Okay, so I've just dropped. I thought that was what you're going to be asked. So I've written a blog recently about search generative experience from Google, and that's my prediction that I touched on earlier, that properly smart generative AI will be the future of content consumption on the internet. It's our job as content marketers or companies trying to market on the digital landscape to provide human expertise and experience to feed into that and build a community and a place and a home for people to come and to get one-to-one advice from. But they're going to get impersonal, not going to get content on a SERP like we do now. They're going to be given it via some sort of assistant experience. So that's my how to try and get positioned there, is just to play the long game and keep providing your expertise that your user will find useful, and people will find their way to you. It's a big trust exercise, I know. But if you can be facilitating helpful conversations, if you can be connecting people in your world together, and your brand is behind that subtly, that'll be the way that people will earn your trust, because you're not going to be able to go and target as much where you want to get in front of people. Even paid's getting harder, isn't it? Like, people aren't just browsing and putting everything on social media like they used to. People are going to be getting more conscious of their data. Things are going to be locked away. So you need to be building your audience ahead of time now for that world, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. I agree. You need to build your audience and feed your audience with valuable insights. So people follow if they get value. They need more value. They are greedy to value. But if you feed with generic stuff, people unfollow, even if they don't do this. Social media and any platform don't recommend your content if nobody engages with this content.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, love it. Paul, it's a big pleasure to get on my show, to learn from you. I love this experience. You know, thanks a lot, especially on Friday. You provide this valuable insights. Tell the best way how to keep learning from you, how to reach out to you, how to follow you.
Find us at avidlyagency.com/HubSpot. That's probably the best place. We've got a newsletter that we send out every 2 weeks. I'd recommend starting there. That's the most fun we have. It's every 2 weeks, a 5-minute read of everything going on in sales and marketing. And we try and make you smile whilst you read it.
Nice. Awesome. Oh, yeah. I think it's not about value. It's more about to provide non-boring content. You need to combine, you know, because people bounce fast. According to data, people bounce fast. Nobody knows it's valuable or not. They can bounce in the beginning, but you need to attract them. You need to make them smile. Mix with your valuable insights, everything will work great. Paul, it's a big pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, I've enjoyed it. Anytime.
Yeah. I recommend to anyone to subscribe to this newsletter. I will submit the link to the website in the description below. Listen us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Unmiss. Enjoyed the show? Drop us a review on your favorite platform and help us spread the digital marketing wisdom. See you next episode.